COVID-19 symptoms do include some cognitive dysfunction, but that alone can't possibly account for the madness we're seeing in some circles around safety, sickness, and survival. With religious rhetoric unavoidable in many of these conflicts, I'm grateful to have Religion News Service national reporter Jack Jenkins back with us. Jack, I appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've taken an in-depth look at some of the mask madness. Are there patterns?
So, and from the religious perspective, one thing that we have noticed is, early on this year, there was, vaccine hesitancy. And that's kind of this idea that people who either have questions about getting a shot or, inoculated against COVID-19 or will only do it if they get or plan to do it if it's required of them. That's kind of that vaccine hesitancy camp. And there were several faith groups for whom that was a significant chunk of their population. But there was another category as well, which is vaccine refusers. These are people who say outright, no matter what, they refuse to get a shot. Now, disproportionately represented in that vaccine refusers camp were white evangelical Protestants, and other groups had hesitancy. Now, what's been interesting is since, there have been a few different polls on this, as this year has progressed, vaccine hesitancy has gone down among multiple groups across the country, multiple faith groups, and it's even gone down among white evangelical Protestants. But that refusers category hasn't changed much at all. White evangelical, the number of refusers in general in the country went from 14% to 13%, so not much of a shift, according to Public Religion Research Institute. And among white evangelical Protestants, it only shifted 2 percentage points, around 26 to 24%, somewhere right around that quarter category. And that looks like they may be calcifying. And what's interesting to note is that that Public Religion Research Institute poll also noted that faith-based overtures had been pretty effective at getting multiple different faith groups, Hispanic Catholics, white mainlanders, what have you, at, upping their vaccine acceptance. But as these refuser groups kind of, calcify, the efficacy of those even faith-based overtures seems to be denting over time. So that's at least the pattern that we're seeing from the 10,000 foot view in terms of which groups are resistant. And to this day, the faith group that now has according to this June poll, that has the largest vaccine refuser category remains white evangelical Protestants.
Where does religion even come into play here?
So I think that's an excellent question. And I think it's a complicated question because, we've seen instances where faith communities have been resistant to vaccinations or certain kinds of healthcare in the past. That's not necessarily new in religious history. What often is the case more recently when it comes to vaccinations is that you don't actually hear people making a religious argument against it. This is before COVID, so much as like religious communities just culturally engage with it. Even if faith leaders were pushing back against it within their communities, there still would be pockets of different religious groups that, culturally would kind of embrace this ideology. What's been an interesting shift in the last year and a half is we've seen some faith groups start to claim this as a matter of faith. We have a member of the armed forces who's suing who's suing for religious privilege resistance to wear a mask, saying that's a violation of their religious principles. That was not it's an open question how anybody can get through a military training, which often requires the wearing of gas masks as a component of it without, while maintaining that religious position, but it's suddenly become a thing people are claiming more openly. Now, more recently, in the last few weeks, and I'm doing some reporting on this now, and we'll have some stuff to publish next week, the Christian nationalist subset of Americans. These are people who believe that America was founded as a Christian nation and very much would like for it to return to that. That ideal, that founding, that they argue was there historically. This is a group that was very active underneath the Trump era. You've started to see folks adopt opposition to vaccine mandates and mask mandates as a religious edict. You're starting to see people say that this is not only an infringement on their freedoms as an individual, but that their faith requires them to rebel against this sort of control, this governmental control, that the vaccine is sinful, that it is, you know, the mark of the beast. These are all things that we're starting to hear in Christian nationalist communities, which are not entirely, but overwhelmingly white and evangelical. So there's less of a theology around this in the sense of, you know, vaccines are inherently evil because scripture says X, Y, and Z, and more about this like religious, for lack of a better term, you know, campaign against government control that slots inside of existing narratives that oppose, you know, big government, what have you, you know, these theologies that are rooted in that. And I should note that Christian nationalism in general often operates less as a theology and more as an identity. So it's not super confusing to see that. This is why you see at these school board meetings, where parents are railing against school board officials who want to pass mask mandates, you often hear faith invoked, saying we don't answer to a doctor, we answer to God.
Yeah. Jack, is it fair to say that houses of worship are once again battlegrounds, even as parts of the nation hit record highs in COVID-19 rates?
Yes. I think it's an interesting dynamic, right? Because on the one hand, you have innumerable faith communities who've actually served as like vaccine locations. You know, mm-hmm. I covered one here in D.C., back in the early part of the year, where, Black Protestant churches were serving as vaccine, places where people can come and just go drive through and get a shot. The head of the National Institutes of Health, Francis Collins, is himself a white evangelical and has been advocating, saying that vaccines are a miracle. You're starting to see any number of religions. I mean, you've seen Pope Francis himself now participate in vaccine campaigns across the planet. And here in the United States, we've had multiple bishops who say that they will not, in their diocese or archdiocese, Catholic bishops, grant religious exemptions to vaccines, saying that that is not a part of Catholic teaching. But on the other hand, you do have communities where this is increasingly becoming a flashpoint. Not only do you have, faith communities like, for instance, Greg Locke in Tennessee, who's kind of earned this reputation as this, virulently anti-masker and also a spreader of, what are largely categorized as conspiracy theories about the election, about COVID-19. He actually, you can't wear a mask in his church. There's a very large sign out front. You have churches like that where, that's kind of dedicated in part and parcel of the community. But then you also have communities where, people are facing a lot of tension within the church community or the faith community, where there are, people in different parts of the pews, as it were, who are in active debate with each other about whether or not they should be vaccinated. And this has been very taxing for some pastors and ministers who say that it's difficult when you have to figure out whether or not to restart in-person services, for instance, when you have very different viewpoints on masks and vaccines within the same congregation. Now, I will say some communities are on the opposite end. For instance, Jewish Americans, it's over 85% vaccine acceptance. There's less tension in those communities. There was a recent advertisement with Orthodox rabbis, encouraging people to get the shot, saying people die who aren't vaccinated. But there does seem to still be some sort of battleground around this in many faith communities.
Yeah, that's what I see. I just see utter distrust at the core of these conflicts. And with that in mind, are you seeing any communities where progress or resolution seems to be taking place?
Well, I think some of my colleagues and I at Religion News Service have kind of reported on, some of these tensions over the last year and a half. Right. And I think there certainly have been pastors and faith leaders who have tried to combat vaccine hesitancy or COVID-19 misinformation in their communities and have had some success. The question that I think isn't quite answered yet, or at least I don't know the answer to it, is what it looks like now. Right. We've hit this point in the COVID-19 debate, as it were, where it's not just about whether or not churches can worship during COVID-19 lockdowns, where, there were no vaccines last year. Now it's about whether or not people get inoculated, whether they wear masks. We're seeing these school board meetings, that have become very fraught One of the disinformation dozen, which is what one research institution qualified 12 individuals who were responsible for over 60%, they say, of COVID-19 misinformation is a woman by the name of Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She is touting any number of conspiracy theories about the vaccine, but she is also, she runs a Bible study. And we have seen people on CNN interviews, you know, people outside Trump rallies and elsewhere quote her and her teachings as, you know, verifying or as shoring up their vaccine opposition or mask opposition. And she on her Bible study articulates her opposition to those things, sometimes in explicitly religious terms. And so I say all that because we seem to be entering a new phase of this debate where if COVID-19 wasn't politicized already, the height and the intensity of that politicization seems to have increased. And we're seeing these videos, not only from school board meetings, but even parents outside of schools, you know, challenging school authorities about whether or not their child should be allowed in without a mask. And that just escalates it to a different dynamic. Even in this past, a couple of weeks ago in Florida, we had a school board meeting where there were people gathered outside in opposition to an impending mask mandate. And they were wearing conservative Christians of that region of Florida shirts. And as doctors attempted to walk by, they were glared at and bumped off the sidewalk by people who appeared to be of that, you know, anti-mask mandate dynamic. So again, the intensity seems to be ratcheting up. And I think that makes it even harder for faith leaders and faith communities to combat, you know, anti-vaccine or anti-mask rhetoric, if that is their calling in their own communities.
Seems to me it is incumbent on political leaders to turn down the heat rather than fan the flames in this kind of situation. Is partisanship keeping voters from demanding their leaders do better, do you think? And is rhetoric from the religious right giving those voters cover in their own minds?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, one thing I'll note that I've seen a couple of different folks raise recently is observing these flash points at school board meetings and these calls for grassroots organizing among these often faith-based, but not exclusively faith-based opposers of mask mandates and vaccine mandates. You know, it has parallels to when the traditional Christian right, religious right, as it is often called, in the 1980s and early 1990s, actually did successively, you know, wage campaigns to take over school board meetings and school boards and, you know, local elected positions through the lens of the culture wars. And I think what has been interesting to watch is I think there's a spectrum of both religious and political belief when it comes to vaccines and masks. But, you know, in the kind of hardline Christian nationalist element that is mixing the two, you know, this COVID-19 misinformation and Christian nationalism, when you're looking at that group and their advocacy, it's becoming less and less clear, you know, moving forward, whether they're going to back away from a political position. It sounds like they're actually moving past Trumpism. One of the lines I heard in a speech earlier from one of these Christian nationalist groups was, I love Trump, but I'm not waiting on him. And they're seeing this mask and vaccine mandate fight as the new cause. They're not being dictated by Donald Trump so much and Trumpism so much as this is the new cause. And I say all that to say that, you know, it is now a political and partisan issue and attempts to de-escalate that. While there were some efforts earlier this summer among Republicans to push for vaccination and for encouraging people to get vaccinated, you know, the idea that this can be torn asunder from partisan politics or even, you know, intra-partisan politics. You know, one thing you often hear in these groups is criticism of fellow Republicans saying that they aren't adequately representing the freedoms that they, you know, these conservative Christians often claim to uphold. And so I don't see this getting away from politics anytime soon. And it would require quite a bit on, you know, the part of politicians to kind of combat that.
Jack, you're so very good at keeping an eye on multiple pots on the religion news stove. just a glance at your Twitter feed confirms what I've just said. I wonder what your take on how things turned out for the 20th anniversary of 9/11 is.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I do think we've seen quite a bit of religious dialogue, right? I mean, I think one of the main stories that came out of 9/11 in the religious realm was a spike in anti-Muslim sentiment, Islamophobia, as is often described. And I think that that sentiment, you know, persists to this day. It was a part of Donald Trump's campaign in 2016, when during his campaign he proposed an explicit ban on Muslims. And, you know, the 9/11 is happening while we're also having a conversation about Afghan special immigrant visas, SIVs, often described as refugees, you know, returning to the United States. And, you know, we're kind of seeing a repeat in many communities of criticism that we saw of Syrian refugees back in 2015 and 2016. So the 9/11 anniversary comes at a time when there seems to be, you know, another uptick in anti-Muslim sentiment among particularly conservative communities here in the United States. And so, you know, there certainly has been also quite a bit of alliance building between various different faith groups because of those spikes beginning in 9/11 and, you know, leading right up until the modern day of anti-Muslim sentiment, of, you know, interfaith groups that, you know, say that we should push back against Islamophobia the same way that we push back against racism, the same way we push back against anti-Semitism, that these are common causes. And so what's been interesting to observe in this conversation around 9/11 is that there are these echoes of things that were of conversations that were had back in, you know, September, October of 2001, still happening now. And there is also a more bolstered and robust, for lack of a better term, response to that among people of faith of across the religious spectrum, advocating for, less ire directed toward Muslim Americans simply because of the faith that they claim. And so I don't know if I have a definitive take on this 9/11 anniversary, but it's certainly been interesting to watch how the dynamic this year looks compared to back in 2001. Right.
Jack, I want to make sure to remind our listeners about your book, because it really is an invaluable look at some of the most defining forces in our world today. The title is American Prophets, The Religious Roots of Progressive Politics and the Ongoing Fight for the Soul of the Country. If you were writing that book today, what chapter would you add from what you're seeing happening around us right now?
Oh, gosh, that is an excellent question. I mean, the knee-jerk answer that I used to have is that I would want to add a chapter on gun violence prevention, because that was something that I alluded to in the epilogue in the book, but I think that there's a full story to be told there. But one thing that I also alluded to in the epilogue of the book that I also think deserves its own chapter, particularly now, is faith-based support for abortion rights. Mm-hmm. That has become a particular narrative in Texas over the last week or so, where we've seen actually a lot of clergy who are not only decrying the new ban on abortion in that state, but also plaintiffs in suits against the law. And I think that community, that tradition of support for abortion rights among people of faith, is actually pretty old. They're actually some of the earliest abortion rights activists in the United States were clergy. And so I think that there is a story to be written about that history, but also one that is developing live in front of us right now that I actually expect to become significantly more vocal and impactful in the coming months.
Jack Jenkins is the award-winning national reporter at Religion News Service. His writing is required reading around here, and I'm very happy to have had him with us again on this week's show. Thank you for being with us again.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.